I would firmly believe that if research results are not used to guide on-farm practices of investment, then the research is really not worth doing in the first place. So any work that we conduct on nutrition and management in Moorpark, we always do that in an effort to try and reduce costs of production maybe. So it would be mainly feed costs, or maybe we might be trying to increase the value of output on a farm. And for that reason, we always try to put a cost on the new practice and a value on the increased output. I suppose really what we're trying to do is to determine if the result is cost beneficial or not, and if it's going to be a benefit to the farmer.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of The Pig Edge, Chagas' Pig Podcast with me, Amy Quinn, where we are bringing you the latest news, information and advice to keep Irish pig farmers up to date. The Chagas Pig Development Department is internationally renowned for its research, primarily focusing much of our programme on conducting research that can produce tangible benefits for commercial farmers on the ground in Ireland. On this month's episode, I'm joined by pig nutrition researcher, Padder Lawler, who of course was our very first guest on The Pig Edge 4 years ago this month. And today we're going to discuss the economic benefits of research. Padder, as a pig nutrition researcher, how important is it to you that your research findings have an impact out there on units?
Look, and I suppose, Amy, the first point would be that research is very expensive. And, you know, whether it's paid for by the farmer or by the exchequer. And I suppose I would firmly believe that if research results are not used to guide on-farm practices and investment, then the research is really not worth doing in the first place. So any work that we conduct on nutrition and management in Moorpark, we always do that in an effort to try and reduce costs of production maybe. So it would be mainly feed costs, or maybe we might be trying to increase the value of output on a farm. And for that reason, we always try to put a cost on the new practice and a value on the increased output. And I suppose really what we're trying to do is to determine if the result is cost beneficial or not, and if it's going to be a benefit to the farmer. And I suppose work done in researchers is, you know, it's independent. So there really should be no conflict of interest. We're not trying to sell anything. And therefore, there's no question maybe that those results should be heeded. But I would say that their implementation on your farm, it's your decision. And they should be based on whether the results are cost beneficial or not. Are they going to give you a benefit financially or not?
Padder, in your experience, are results of trial work for the most part always cost beneficial?
Yeah, that's a good question, Amy. We would always start a trial, particularly in nutrition work, with a hypothesis. In other words, what we expect to happen. And our hypothesis would normally be that we would get an increase in technical performance. So we'd be looking for maybe an increase in average daily gain, or very typically an improvement in feed efficiency. So in most cases, that would be the case. You'd get that response. However, that's not always the case. You know, you might have a lovely hypothesis and that may not hold true. And that happens in, I suppose, a limited amount of cases. And on top of that, even if you get a very good result, maybe you've improved your feed efficiency significantly. The cost of implementing that change on your farm may be so high that even if you get that benefit in terms of reduced feed costs, the practice will not be cost beneficial. And I suppose that's why we have research centres and universities, the likes of ourselves in Moorpark, AFBI in the north and UCD. And really our purpose is to test new technologies and treatments and to de-risk their implementation for the farmer.
Could you give us some examples of recent research results and whether they're cost beneficial or not?
Sure, Amy. Look, there's numerous probably trials and that we could look at. But we can take a look at some of the milk feeding studies that we did with PhD students Shiv Vaza and Alyssa Arnaud, maybe as a start. Both of those, actually, just to mention it, have won the Industry Award. And that's a fairly prestigious award at the British Society of Animal Science in two separate years for their work on milk replacer feeding to suckling and weaned pigs. We could also maybe look at some of the work that James Cullen did with us here on sanitization programs or protocols for liquid feeding systems. And as a matter of fact, James also won that same industrial prize in 2023 for his work on that. So I'd like to go through some of his results also with you.
That's quite an achievement for the three of them, really.
Yeah, I suppose the reality is that they did the work they did, they were able to cost it out and show that there was a benefit, or maybe in some cases not a cost benefit with regard to implementing the results on farm.
Yeah, it just goes to show the importance of doing that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that's critical, and that goes back to maybe your first question that we, is the research worth doing in the first place? And in my mind, there's no point in doing research unless it's going to have a benefit out on commercial farms.
Patter, look, you mentioned the work on feeding milk replacer to suckling pigs. Can you take us through this?
Sure, Amy. Look, I suppose this is an interesting area because of the high litter sizes we have currently, and trying to keep all of those pigs alive and keep them growing. I suppose we looked at two trials on this, and the results were very different in both. I suppose the first one we were just finding our feet, but in the first trial we looked at three treatments. We looked at a dry pelleted diet offered as a creep feed from day 10 of lactation, and that's typically what most farms would be doing out there on commercial units currently. Our second treatment was where we fed a liquid milk replacer from day 3 of lactation right up to weaning. And in our third treatment, we fed a mixture of a liquid milk replacer and a starter diet from day 3 of lactation. And I suppose just maybe to point out there, that last treatment where we had the mixture of the milk replacer and starter diet, we were progressively trying to reduce the proportion of milk in that mix as the pigs got closer to weaning. So in the last week, prior to weaning, they would have been on 100% liquid starter diet. Anyway, when we put those results together, I suppose we found no improvement in mortality of the pigs as a result of the milk or the liquid feeding, and we only found small changes in weaning weight as a result of the liquid feeding treatments. And I suppose that surprised us a little bit, but it meant that our feed cost per kilo gain between day 3 and weaning was about 9 cent for the dry pelleted starter diet, so that was our control. But it increased to a massive 20 cent for our liquid milk replacer, and was around about 10 cent for the mixture. So we learned from that trial that milk feeding from day 3 to weaning more than doubled our feed costs, and was therefore, it was a treatment that wasn't cost beneficial to work with going forward. But nonetheless, we looked at this and we learned from that trial that if we could improve our feeding management, then the feeding of the liquid mixture of milk replacer and starter diet might be an option to look at in future work. So I suppose we went on from there. And we improved the feeding management. And how did we do that? We went about doing that by increasing the frequency of sensor checks on the troughs into which the liquid feed was fed, so that the troughs were seldom empty or seldom without liquid feed. And that was particularly important in the last week prior to weaning, because that's when you're going to get the bulk of your intake from creep feeding. And once we optimized that, we conducted another trial. And that trial included treatments for dry pelleted feed, again, as our control. And that was offered as a creep feed from day 10 of lactation. And another treatment that involved feeding that mixture of liquid milk replacer and starter diet from day 3 of lactation. So in that case, creep feeding increased. The liquid creep feeding, in fact, increased the dry matter intake of our pigs by about 25%. It increased our weaning weight by about half a kilo. And very importantly, it reduced mortality from day 3 to weaning from 4% to about 2.4%. And although the total creep feeding cost per pig was twice that for liquid compared to dry feeding, being about 42 cent for the dry pelleted starter diet and 83 cent per pig for the liquid feeding, we found that the increased gain and the reduced mortality when they were costed meant that there was still an advantage to the liquid feeding in terms of reduced feed and mortality cost per kilo gain. So if you were to look at that cost, it was about 39 cent per kilo gain with your dry pelleted starter diet fed from 10 days, and it was about 31 cent per kilo gain for our liquid mixture of milk replacer and starter diet. So we didn't take into account in those calculations the capital costs of installing the liquid feeding system and maybe some of the operating and hygiene costs associated with it. But you have about 0.8, sorry, you have 8 cent per kilo gain there up to weaning to pay for that going forward. So there is an option there, and depending on your system and the expense or the cost of the system that you're using, the cost of installing that system, this practice could be very very effective.
Pater, based off these studies and their economics, what type of liquid milk system would you choose?
Yeah, Amy, look, I suppose first of all I'd always go back to the fact that milk replacer is expensive. It's about three times the price of dry pelleted starter diet. Okay, so I suppose you should always think, there's a place for milk replacer, right? But it should be used to best effect, and it should be used sparingly. And I suppose bearing that in mind, I'd be inclined to opt for a very simple milk feeding system, and I'd feed liquid milk from about day three, as we did in our trials, but I wouldn't feed it for any longer than up to about day 10 of lactation to the piglets. And I suppose doing that, you will get most of the benefit in terms of reducing mortality that we saw in our trials from feeding milk replacer all the way through to weaning. However, as soon as you get to day 10, or maybe a little bit before it even, I would then move my pig straight onto a starter diet. And that could be either a liquid starter diet or, fed in liquid form or fed in dry form. And I suppose if you adopt good practices on your farm, you can get very high dry matter intakes with dry creep feeding. But some farmers see the benefit of gruel feeding in the farrowing rooms, and if they do so, well, that's fine. But my choice would be to opt for a very simple, low-cost system to feed the milk up to about day 10 of lactation, and then quickly get your pigs onto the cheaper starter diet as quickly as possible to reduce your feed cost.
Pat, you also looked at feeding milk replacer to wean pigs. What are the economics here?
Yes, Amy, we've looked at feeding milk replacer after weaning to pigs for a period of time. And I suppose it's important to note here that it wasn't just milk replacer that we were feeding on its own. It was provided as a supplement to dry pelleted starter diet. So they had dry pelleted starter diet from wet dry feeders in addition to us giving the milk replacer. But we looked at feeding the milk replacer for about for 4 days or 10 days post weaning. And I suppose there were a number of important results here. And the first was that we got huge increases in feed intake, dry matter intake, and average daily gain while the milk was being fed. Okay. And these were dramatic increases in intake, almost doubling from that of providing dry pelleted starter diet on its own. Okay. That was our first result. We also found that pigs chose the milk replacer in preference to the dry pelleted starter diet. Okay. So I suppose our idea was that we were feeding the milk to get the pigs over a hump and get them onto the dry pelleted starter diet, but they were consuming the milk when both were offered. They chose the milk replacer over the dry pelleted starter diet. And remember, this is an important issue because that milk, as we said before, costs three times the price of dry pelleted starter diet. I suppose another important result that we got that mortality post weaning was not affected by feeding the milk replacer post weaning. And another important result was that it was only when we fed the milk replacer, liquid milk replacer, for 10 days post-weaning that we got long-lasting effects or lifetime effects in our pigs. In other words, when we fed for 10 days, we got an increase in carcass weight in the order of about 2.6 kilos where we fed the milk replacer for 10 days post-weaning. Anyway, when we cost all of this and take all of this into account and cost it, we find that despite almost doubling the intake in the first 10 days post-weaning, milk feeding is not cost beneficial. When it's fed for 4 days or 10 days, it doesn't matter. It's not cost beneficial. For example, Amy, when the milk was fed for 10 days, the feed cost over that period was increased by about €8.90 per pig. And even when the value of the increased carcass weight is considered, the feed cost over the 10-day period is still in the order of €4.11 higher than that for the dry pelleted starter diet on its own. So I suppose, therefore, the practice is simply not economic. Feeding, I suppose, if we move on from there, feeding a liquid starter diet alone, or maybe feeding a mixture of the milk with the replacer, that may cheapen the practice and may give some of the benefits seen with the milk replacer feeding. But it certainly would be a better choice. I suppose, look, this is an important trial too, because this is an example of where we can get a huge benefit in terms of technical performance, right? And we got that, and we affected our carcass weight significantly, getting, 2.6 kilo increase in carcass weight. And we got huge increases in feed intake and weight gain earlier on. But the reality was the cost of implementing that practice was so high that there was no economic benefit seen from the practice. So look, it was important to do it, and it was important to cost it out.
Patter, if we look now at the sanitization program for liquid feeding systems you mentioned earlier, what is the cost of implementing this?
Yeah, look, I suppose we'll start off by, previous work that we did in Moorpark shows that, liquid feeding can, compared to dry feeding, can worsen your feed efficiency by up to 0.2 of an FCE unit. And you mightn't think that's a big deal, right? But it is a big deal. This difference is enormous in terms of increased feed cost for the pig. Like at the moment, the cost of 0.1 of an FCE unit is around, it's actually over €3 a pig. Okay. So that 0.2 of an FCE unit, if we could claw it back, is worth €6 per pig. Okay, so that's huge. Anyway, the sanitization program that we implemented involved thorough cleaning and scrubbing of the liquid feeding system here in Moorpark. And following that, we introduced an alkali wash and then an acid wash. And while the pigs were being fed after that initial protocol, they were given a maintenance, the system was given a maintenance acid rinse overnight, so that acid was rinsed through the mixing tank and around through the pipeline. Okay. Anyway, the protocol was very successful, in our minds at least, because it gave reduced microbial counts in mixing tanks, but particularly in the feed pipelines. And remember, we're trying to get these clean to stop them seeding the feed mixture, the liquid feed, with bacteria that is going to cause malfermentations. So look at that. They were the results of the trial, but then we want to look at the cost benefit, and we had to make some assumptions here, right? And we assumed, remember we said that liquid feeding versus dry feeding, there could be a difference of 0.2 of an FCE unit. Well, we said here that we're going to assume that if we implement this sanitization protocol, we'll get a modest improvement, maybe 0.05 of an FCE unit improvement. Okay. And then we costed in the price of the chemicals, the additional labor, the equipment costs associated with the protocol, so that we had full costs there on the system. We looked at this then in three different scenarios, one with batches of 1,000 pigs, one with batches of 5,000 pigs, and one with a batch of 10,000 pigs. And we found that the protocol increased margin per pig by between 87 cent and €1.20 per pig. And of course, the benefit was increased with the scale of your batch size. So certainly, in the case of the sanitization program, it is cost beneficial, and it's something that we should be doing out on commercial units. And, you know, if you look at a lot of commercial units, maybe that system has never been properly cleaned since it was installed. So there is a benefit to be reaped there.
Okay, so based on everything you've gone through, Pater, what would you say are the key learnings for someone about to invest in a new practice, let's say on their farm?
Well, I'd say, first of all, Amy, that you need to look at the improvements found in technical performance, right? Or maybe other benefits. You know, you might have a benefit from a practice that reduces labor requirement, okay, as a result of implementing whatever change or treatment. And I would look for independent third-party information on this. Don't take it from the person directly that is selling you the product. Look for independent third-party data on this and cost out the benefit. Then you need to look at the cost of implementing the change or the treatment. And that may include capital costs, certainly include operating costs, but it may include maybe feed ingredient costs as well. And at the end of the day, the practice, even though it may be labor-saving or it may improve technical performance like feed efficiency, it must also be cost-beneficial. In other words, the benefit that you see from the practice should always exceed the costs incurred in implementing that practice.
Pater, this work and more is going to be presented at this year's Pig Open Day on May 22nd in Moor Park and on May 24th in Ballyhays, isn't it?
Yes, Amy. And I suppose from my group, Alyssa and myself will look at the milk feeding work from her and Shivaz's PhD programs. James Cullen is going to look at the liquid feeding hygiene, I suppose, in particular, but other aspects of liquid feeding for finisher pigs. And Joseph Glynn, who's a new student with us, will be looking at a trial that he's currently doing on feeding low acid binding capacity diets to newly weaned pigs. Wendy Isadonwen then will look at the benefits of dry creep feeding. And of course, Amy, we will be looking at other work from the pig department. There'll be work there on farrowing room management, managing pig health, looking at sustainability. And there'll be an update provided on the pig research facility and the new feed lab in Moor Park.
Yes, we look forward to seeing lots of our listeners there. There's going to be lots on show. And I just want to take the opportunity to encourage you all to register to attend this event in either location. And I will include a registration link in the podcast notes so you can do just that. Thanks, Pater.
Thank you very much, Amy.
That's it for this episode of The Pig Edge. And thanks a million to Pater for joining me on the show. Don't forget to listen and follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from so you never miss an episode. And for more information from the Pig Development Department, go to chagas.ie/pigs. I'm Amy Quinn. Thanks for listening.